Morning, everybody. Thank you all for hopping on your Zoom. Nice to see so many people here. So as a philosopher, as somebody who deals in the realm of philosophy, it comes to Pesach, and it's Zman Cheritenu. Now, of course, Zman Cheritenu, when it comes to Pesach on the whole, I suppose is talking more about a form of freedom that we might think of as political freedom, right? The freedom of a nation from subjugation by another nation. So very much freedom from subjugation. And that's something that is very important, obviously, and that we think about a lot. On the other hand, there's another form of freedom, because political freedom's all very well. If we're free as a nation from other nations, that's obviously significant, but it's only as significant as the individual freedoms that we have as part of that free nation. And the question of individual freedom, of course, also comes up in the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim more broadly, very famously, tried and trusted questions regarding Paro. But there's something very interesting about the way that we worry about the Paro question. Right. So when Pharaoh is deciding how to respond to the Makot, we often ask the question about the point at which we're told, v'chichbadeti et libo, right? When God hardens Pharaoh's heart, we're worried. And that makes sense, because that's kind of the individual corollary to the national subjugation, right? The reason we're worried about being enslaved in Mitzrayim is because there's some external force stopping us from living our lives. So there's something external to us, and that prevents us doing what we want to do. And that's obviously a lack of freedom. And we understand that, and that's problematic. And thus, Yitziat Mitzrayim is the incredibly significant event in the history of Bnei Yisrael that it is. When we worry about Paro, and when we worry about this v'chichbadeti et libo, it's the same problem, right? We worry about it because, as far as we're concerned, well, then there's something external to him forcing him to do the thing that he doesn't necessarily want to do. And at least that's how we set up the question. And then there are lots of answers, of course. But that's how we set up the question. So same thing, right? Subjugation to something alien that stops you doing what you want to do. And we understand that as a lack of freedom. What we don't ask is about the initial stages of that. When it's not v'chbadeti et libo, it's v'chbed et libo, right? What about when Pharaoh hardens his own heart? We're fine with that. Right? Well, that was him, right? That's his own fault. He's got nobody to blame but himself. But that brings up an interesting question about the extent to which that is his own fault. Because there are many, many challenges, and those challenges have just become all the more powerful in the last 100 years or so with the developments in modern science, to free will as a whole, just as individuals. And there are those who might argue that the reason that Pharaoh hardened his own heart initially was a function of, and then there are many, many different varieties of this, right, of what we call determinism, that he was somehow determined to act that way. And you can go more microscopic, right? You can talk about the fact that as a physical being, he is subject to the same laws of physics as everything else. And those laws are cause, effect, cause, effect, cause, effect, such that he could not have done anything different, right? Now, there are ways that people will try and get out of that and say, well, maybe he's got something else, a mind, a soul, right? And that escapes the net of physics. So that's the kind of locus of free will. But in that case, there are other challenges that people will bring, psychological challenges. So there's psychological determinism, where no, well, he was the kind of individual. Let's get away from the microscopic talk about the way atoms and molecules interact, cause and effect. And let's just talk about his psychology right? You know, Nebuchadnezzar was brought up in a way that was bound to lead him to do that, such that he couldn't have done anything else, right? And obviously, that's a very sort of, how should I put it, ill-informed way of putting it. Apologies to anybody in psychology who is here, but you can give a far more sophisticated account that would lead to this idea that, well, you know, say, what's the difference? That ultimately, is there any difference between external compulsion, someone forcing you, a gun to the head, metaphorically speaking, and internal compulsion, where there might not be a gun outside to your head making you do what you're doing, but there might well be internal factors that are indeed determining what you're doing. And what we want, of course, is free will, that not to be the case, that I'm responsible and I'm to blame or to be praised for my actions. And not only do we want that, but it's utterly essential to Judaism. And it's that question, the question of free will, that I want to look at today, right? What is the nature of free will? Because actually, it is, to give you a spoiler right at the beginning, deeply mysterious, right? Free will is genuinely deeply mysterious. And we're going to show why by looking at some of the views of two very, very significant medieval Jewish philosophers, Ralbag, Rabbi Levi ben Gershom, and Rav Chasdai Kreskas. And Kreskas actually sets up nicely. So Rav Chasdai Kreskas was a major leader of a Spanish Jewry in the 14th century. He lives approximately 1340 to 1410, 1411. Was a big leader in kind of Saragossa, in the kind of anti-Jewish riots in 1391. He was instrumental in rebuilding the Jewish community in Spain at that time. So he was a kind of very significant Jewish leader, as well as a very significant Jewish thinker stroke writer. And he wrote this work, Or Hashem, The Light of the Lord, which was his work in Jewish philosophy. It was supposed to be actually I think it was meant to be the second part of a two-part book. It was a response to Rambam in terms of philosophically. This was somebody who was kind of taking issue with the philosophy of the Rambam. But there was meant to be a first part of the book, which was going to be a halachic work, which was critiquing Rambam's Mishneh Torah, right? So it was going to be both a halachic work, a halachic critique, and the philosophical work. We only have the philosophical work, right? And the philosophical work, Or Hashem, fascinating book. And already at this point, medieval Jewish philosophers have started writing in medieval kind of philosophical Hebrew, as opposed to the Arabic or the Judeo-Arabic that they'd written in previously. And as you will see here, Chasdai Kreskas, and this is from Or Hashem, kind of part two, or book two, part five, it's kind of Klal Hamishi. Book two is split into these six principles that he discusses, and principle number five is Bechira, right? Choice. Why? Well, choice really matters. As he tells us, right? Lefi shekvar kadam lanu shim yisodot hadat hu habechira, right? We've already kind of, you know, established, as far as he's concerned, that choice is one of the principles, the foundations of Judaism, and why? Shetia reshut kol adam nutana lo. Right? Everybody has the ability to kind of, you know, every human being has the ability to do whatever it might be. And why is this so important? Right. And this is because the term mitzvah, the word mitzvah, right, isn't going to apply to something if you've been forced to do it, if you're constrained, if you're compelled to do it. Right. Then mitzvah, commandment. The idea of commandment only makes sense if you actually have the ability to do what you're commanded, right? Right? It can't be that you're forced. It has to be that a person's kind of will is open to, you know, right? We're not just kind of dealing here with a nice simple kind of forking path of two, yeah, to anything, right? I could choose now to do all manner of things. And then the idea of a command then it's right. Then it kind of is obviously appropriate, is relevant, right? And you just think about that, it's kind of obvious, right? If I command you and say, I command you to now levitate, all of you, right? You all must levitate. And if you don't, I'm going to punish you, right? You're all going to say, that's ridiculous, right? You can't command me to, I can't levitate. It's not possible. So that's just not fair. It's not just. If I were to ask you to do something completely, you know, normal, I say, please stand up, and you'll stand up, say, excellent, and I will reward you for standing up. You'd say, yeah, that's fine. It's, you know, easy money, but, right, it's something I can do. But if I can't do anything else, well, then the whole idea of telling you you ought to do something doesn't make sense. And that's what he's setting up here, right? The Shem Mitzvah, the whole idea of the term mitzvah being appropriate depends on choice, depends on me saying, yeah, you know what, I choose to do this or not, right? And one would think schar v'onesh, right, only makes sense in that context. I get schar because I chose to do this and I could have not done it. Or onesh, I chose to not do something or to abrogate, transgress, and I could have chosen not to. And that's why I merit some kind of praise, blame, judgment, right? Hopefully that's very straightforward. So it matters. It really matters. So what is this idea of free will, right? And you've kind of got it there very pithily in the way that Hustai Kreskas puts it when he talks about kind of, the, you know, it needs to be that your rutson, right, your will, is able to turn l'chol echad me'asad din, right? But actually, when it comes to defining this free will, we find two very different views expressed. And the first one, the simplest, if you like, this is almost like we're going to do a peirush on what is it to have kind of, you know, your ratzon hapashut, right? Able to turn l'chol echad mehastadim, right? And we're going to do two peirushim on that, effectively, philosophical peirushim on it, okay? The first being Ralbag. And Ralbag, just kind of a little bit earlier than Hustai Kreskas, lived 1288, 1344, spent his whole life in southern France, in the Provence area, and probably best known for his peirush on much of Tanakh, but also for his philosophical work, Milchamot Hashem, The Wars of the Lord. Though, if there is one thing from today that you will always remember and never forget, it is this, that he has a crater on the moon named after him, right? There is a crater on the moon named Rabbi Gershom. This is because he was also a kind of an astronomer, and he created an instrument called Jacob's staff, right, for measuring angles or distances between planets, and therefore there is a crater on the moon named after him. So if you remember nothing else, that you'll remember. So Ralbag. Now Ralbag is one of the most fascinating Jewish thinkers of the medieval period, and is quite well known for a controversial view. And it's a controversial view that does come up now in the little piece we're going to look at, though I'm not going to actually get into it. But the controversial view is related to free will, because Ralbag was, as many philosophers before and since, was very troubled by the fact that traditional notions of divine omniscience, of the idea that God knows everything and therefore knows the future, right? Foreknowledge, the idea of foreknowledge. That was a challenge to free will, right? As far as he's concerned, let's take a very simple example. You are all here on this Zoom today. And you chose to do this foolishly, right? So you chose to come and listen to this and could have chosen not to. Right. And that's what we all think about our actions. And of course, the problem, simply put, and again, there are more sophisticated ways of putting the argument, but simply put, if God has known from all eternity that you were going to be here today, then you didn't really have a choice. Right. And that, again, there are all kinds of answers to this. It's not clear any of them are really very good, actually, but there are many, many answers to this question. And the basic challenge, however, is simply that if it has been, the kind of one way of putting it, if it has been true for all eternity, that at 9:47 on Sunday, where are we, 27th of March, Daniel Reinhold would be saying these very words to you now, that's been true for all eternity, then however I might have felt about it, there was nothing else that could be happening at this moment, right? Now, I say there are solutions. One of those solutions is the solution given by Ralbach. And in giving his solution, he tells us immediately his views on free will and the nature of free will. And to be honest, I think Ralbach's notion of free will is the intuitive idea that I would imagine the vast majority of us turn up this morning believing. All right, so here it is. But it's in the context, he's explaining it in the context of the divine foreknowledge dilemma, right? So he tells us here, Milchamot Hashem, this is book 3, chapter 4, V'nomar, Shekvah hit ba'er b'mashek adam, right? It's already explained before. She'elu ha'inyanim ha'efsharim, right? These things that we're calling the possible, right? Basically, everything that we do is within the nature of the possible, efshari, right? Because it was possible that you would come today or not. It so happens you did. That possibility became actual. But there are other people who aren't here, and maybe it was possible they were and they didn't, right? So these things are nature of the possible, as in we think of them as possible things that could happen, and many of them do happen, as they have here, right? But that's what he's talking about, nature of the possible. Things that are possibilities. So as we look to what we're going to do the rest of the day, all kinds of possibilities, all of those things are the nature of the inyanim efsharim, right? So he tells us what we've already said is that these things, these efsharim, these things that are in the nature of the possible, hem mugbalim umusudarim mitzad, the efsharim mitzad acher. Right? So what he's saying is everything that we do that we deem to be within the nature of the possible, from one perspective, they are indeed efshari, right, possible, but from another, they are actually kind of ordered and defined. So everything that we do is ordered and defined from one perspective and possible from another. Right, we'll explain further. Uviyote in yonken, and since it's the case, humavar, ki at sadashe yat ambo, hu at sadashe hemusidarim mukbalim. Right, and therefore, God knows things in as much as they are musudarim umubalim, right? He knows things in as much as they are kind of defined and determinate, right? So God knows something about every possibility. And the thing he knows about it is the thing about it that is musudar umubal. Right? Again, don't worry, we will explain. Because from that perspective, God can know it. But vasadashe lo yadam, but the perspective from which God doesn't know these things, who had said, Hembol bilti mesudarim, right, is from the perspective where they are not ordered, which is, who had said, Asher Hembol efsharim, right, the perspective from which they're possible. Kimiza said, efshar shetipol idea by him, right, it's impossible to know them, right. Let's maybe pause there and give an example to explain, and we'll use our tried and trusted example of you coming here today. Or my being here today. Let me not put this on you. Right here I am. Now, on the one hand, there is something that, from God's perspective, is mugbalu musudar about my being here. Now, we can put this in a very generalized sense, right? I'm a professor of Jewish philosophy, dean of Revel. There's a Kol Yom Rishon. It's a Revel thing, right? So if God is thinking about, right, the kind of things that might happen if in a Jewish institution where there's a Kol Yom Rishon and they want to do something and it's Pesach, they might be freedom. I'm the kind of guy who might be doing it, right? Okay. Now, from the Ralbach perspective, right, things get far more granular, right? Ralbach believes in astral determinism. He believes that, and this is something that, you know, is very much in a lot of Jewish literature, Something that is somewhat like star signs, right? And yeah, you read them in rubbish magazines and papers, but in those days it was a science, right? Not everyone believed in it. Rumbum did not, but Rollbug and the majority of people did, and believed that because I was born when Venus was in the ascendant, and that's not true, I'm just making up words that might be relevant to such a thing, right? But because of that, that determines, on the whole, much of my life, right? We really are determined by, and he goes on to say this actually in the very next sentence, more or less, where he goes, Ulam yadam is anyan shem asharim shelo yagum it sadha bechira asher samo tamba adam hashem it brach la shlim ma shechaseh min hashmira mifat hagramim hashemayim. Right, so that's where he says that kind of, you know, and in terms of this knowledge of the possible, right, the fact God can't know it is because of the free will that he gave human beings. And it, as it says there, in order to make up for the chisaron, for the lack in the astral causes, right? For the point being, we are actually genuinely determined for our bug by these astral kind of determinants. But unlike other things in the world, human beings have the ability to subvert their fate because God gave us free will, right? So it is the case that not only because I happen to be, you know, a Jewish philosopher and Rabbi Shaul thought that we could do something with Revel, right? As far as Rollbug's concerned, the reason Rabbi Shaul asked me is because when he was born, Venus was somewhere, and because I was born Venus somewhere else, that's why I'm doing this, and what he asked me, etc. That's why you're here, because you were born when something was there, and that made you, right? Literally everything completely determined. But we have the ability to subvert astral determinism because God gave us free will. And because of that, yeah, Kamashit Bamar Hakodem, he's explained all the astral determinism in the prior book, which is actually all about prophecy. And as a result of that, Veloyada Eze Mishnechelke Haefshar Hu Yagia. Right. Therefore, he doesn't know which of the two possibilities will actually be realized, but such HMF Shariim, because they are possibilities. Yeah. Because if God did know, then there would be no such thing as possibility at all. Right. So that's very, very clear. He's telling us, he's giving us the classic view of free will, which is some of you were likely astrally determined not to come here today. But because God gave you free will, because he gave you free will, some of you managed to subvert that evil thought and come anyway, of your own free will. Okay? As in, astrally speaking, somebody here was born when certain things were a certain way in terms of astrology. That means they're not going to come here. But their free will managed to bring them. And that means God knows the following, according to Rollbug. God knows that a person born in that kind of, with that kind of configuration, generally will not be going to a shiur on free will. That's what God knows. But he also knows, but they might. Right? I gave him free will, they might. That's what God knows, according to Rollbug. Right? He knows the possibilities, but he can't know which one actually occurs, because if he does, then there's no free will. So Rollbug does, you know, and it's a view that has gone to some controversy, right? But he does not think that God does know. Well, for our purposes, we'll just keep things simple, right? The future, right? God doesn't know the outcomes of future human action. Rollbug actually thinks God doesn't know any kind of particulars about the world at all, other than the Masuda Umugbal stuff. But we're going to leave that aside for our purposes and not open that Pandora's box. So what's important here? Rollbug clearly believes in the intuitive notion of free will, which is the garden of forking paths. Right? You have two choices. You've done one of them, but you could have done the other. right? Alternate possibilities, right? And I see someone there talking about quantum mechanics, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, which is, yes, I guess that's, it's interesting that does come up in some of the contemporary discussions of free will for various reasons that maybe we'll mention depending if we have time. But yeah, okay, that's kind of what we got. So free will, and as I say, I think this is the intuitive notion. I stand before two paths and I could do either of them. And free will is that ability to do either, to have genuine alternate possibilities, right? That's free will. So says Rel Bug. And that's what, as I say, we intuitively think. It's interesting, however, that there is a very different view of free will put forward by Chastai Kreskes. And one of the problems of this view of free will that we've looked at so far is, however intuitively compelling it might be, it's actually a little bit problematic, right? It's actually not quite as obviously a good thing as we might have thought, Rel Bug's version of free will, okay? This for many reasons. I will share with you one of them, okay, which is that given by a famous philosopher, A.J. Ayer, talking of freedom and necessity, talking about this question. It's just a good way of exhibiting the problems that might come about. He writes a piece on freedom and necessity. It says the following: when the moralist makes it a condition of my being morally responsible that I should act freely, he does not wish to imply that it's purely a matter of chance that I act as I do. What he wishes to imply is that my actions are the result of my own free choice, and it's because they're the result of my own free choice that I'm held to be morally responsible for them. Right? Again, thinking about, you know, Pharaoh is a good example, right? The fact that he hardened his heart, we want to say, well, he did that because he chose to do that. That's why he's to blame for it. And not that it's a matter of chance, right? Not literally that at that point it's 50-50 and it's that one. Tomorrow it might be that one, right? Random. That's not free, right? Randomness is arbitrariness. You shouldn't be to blame for random arbitrary acts. Sometimes you can use that as a defense, right? He acted out of character, right? That can even be a legal defense, right? That something happened and he acted in a way that completely didn't really flow from his actual nature, right? That's not free. Free will is, it comes from me. I chose. Ayer goes on, but now we must ask how it is that I come to make my choice. Either it's an accident that I chose to act as I do, or it is not. If it is an accident, then it's merely a matter of chance that I did not choose otherwise. And if it's merely a matter of chance that I did not choose otherwise, it is surely irrational to hold me morally responsible for choosing as I did. But if it's not an accident that I choose to do one thing rather than another, then presumably there's some causal explanation of my choice. And in that case, we're led back to determinism. Okay. All right. It's a very kind of interesting challenge. We want to think we're free because I could have done that, could have done that. But what does that mean? Does that really mean I stand here, it's 50-50, but then it's random? Then it's not really a decision. It's not my character. It's just everything's like flipping a coin. That's not a morally responsible person. Every act's flipping a coin, right? You know why I came here today? I was asked and I said yes. And I generally, if I'm asked to say yes, I do that. Imagine if, right, 9:28, I'm like, oh, I'm going to be doing that thing today. Yes, I do that generally. And I just randomly decide, no, I'm not going to, right? For no apparent reason, right? Not caused by anything other than, right? No, that would be psychotic if we acted that way, right? Genuinely. If everything was 50-50, and you know what? Forget 50-50. People don't like that. 80-20, right? Well, I'm the kind of guy generally does, so I'm very likely to, unless God forbid something happened, I couldn't, right? So even make it 99% that I was going to be here. That 1%, right? That 1% means that, yeah, but you could just have some kind of, you know, sudden thing happens in your head that you're like, no, that's crazy. We don't want to act that way. But isn't that what alternate possibility suggests? Don't I want to be the kind of guy who says I'm going to do it and then I do it? Why? Because that's who I am. Right. And that's my character, and it's determined and all of that. Right. So do I want alternate possibilities? See, the intuitive view of free will is very powerful, but you start to think about it and actually not quite so clear that it would bring with it the kind of moral responsibility we want, right? This all began with the idea of a mitzvah. We want to feel we're responsible for the performing of mitzvot, or God forbid the other, right? But we're responsible. That's why there is some kind of justice in the whole idea of schar ve'onesh, or just, you know, praise and blame, right? You get praised and blamed for things. Why? Well, because you deserve praise or blame because you chose to do them. But if everything were just a function of, you know, you did something. Nothing caused, everything ultimately a coin flip. And sometimes, yeah, the coin flip might be 80-20, 90-10, there's still a coin flip. There's still a kind of, can just happen, uncaused. That wouldn't seem to make you a responsible human being who should be held responsible. It's not my fault. The 1% thing just kicked in and I just did something that I didn't want to do, right? Or did something that was completely crazy. Why? Well, because everything's kind of random. That's the problem. Now, not to say that's not the correct view of free will, but just to generate the view that it's not quite as simple as it might have first sounded. And therefore, we get a very different view from Chasdai Kreskas, right? Which is far more deterministic. Look what Chasdai Kreskas has to say as we go to here, right? V'lezehu mevoah she'em b'chol ha'tanot ha'hem mitzad ha'iyun mitzad ha'torah ma she'chayev chiyuv ha'davrim b'b'chinat atzmam, right? V'lezeh haya ha'emet ha'gemur k'vi ma she'chayevehu ha'torah ve'iyun she'ateva ha'efshari nimtza b'dvarim b'b'chinat atzmam lo b'b'chinat tzibotam, right? Now, we'll go back over that, but just to get the terminology out there. Chasdai Kreskas has spent the first two chapters of Klal Chamishi of Book 2 talking about arguments for and against the nature of the possible, right? So he gives kind of arguments for determinism, saying there's no such thing as possibility, no such thing as free will. And then he gives a whole load of arguments saying there is. And then he says that, well, I've shown you the arguments for, arguments against, so they both seem convincing, so, you know, what am I going to do? And he gives us his account. And his account is that from all the arguments he's given, whether philosophical or from the Torah, he gives both philosophical arguments and arguments from the Torah, right? What you actually find is, Mashiachayev chiyuv hadvarim b'p'china atzmam, right? What you find is that when we're talking about necessity, we're talking about, it's only about things that are necessary in themselves. Don't worry, we will explain. And when it talks about the possible, nimsa farim b'prinat atzmam, lo b'prinat sibotam, right? That the arguments that he's given here, right, are all arguments against the idea of the possible b'prinat atzmam, possible in themselves, but not b'prinat sibotam, possible in terms of its cause. Right? What is this distinction? What is this possible in itself, possible via its cause, right? And for that matter, necessary in itself, chiyuv b'prinat atzmam. Right? So what are all these categories that he's set out for us? I've got three categories. And we're going to go back to our tried and trusted example. We'll add in one other. So the following is an example of something that is necessary in itself, right? All bachelors are unmarried, right? All bachelors are unmarried is necessary in itself, meaning, for our purposes, it has to be the case. There is no possibility of it being otherwise. Why? It's true by definition, right? And you don't need, if I tell you this, all bachelors are unmarried, you don't need to go and do a survey. Are you a bachelor? Are you unmarried? Right? You can know the truth of it sitting in your chair. Because by definition, it's a logical contradiction to talk about a married bachelor, right? These are just terms. And therefore, that's something that's necessary in itself, right? There is no possibility otherwise in any possible world. right? This is an utter necessity. Just taken in isolation, it's an absolute necessity. Let's take my being here this morning. Now, on the one hand, if you take that in isolation, right, the sentence, Daniel Reinhold is speaking at 10:07, right, on March 27th. That in itself is possible, as in, history might have gone such that I wasn't here doing this at that time, right? Yes, so in itself, this isn't a necessary truth about the world, right? I mean, another good example of a necessary truth about the world would be triangles have internal angles 180 degrees, right? Let's take that one, okay? In any world that ever there was, and any history that ever there was, that's just what a triangle is, right? You could not have history in which triangles had four sides, right? But you could have a world in which we weren't here today. In and of itself, right, that is a possibility. It's possible, bibchinat atzma, right? Bibchinat atzma in this case, right? Right, it's possible, yeah? Yes, non-Euclidean space indeed, that is fair. But, you know, you'll forgive the botched example. Fact is, while that's possible in itself, it might still be necessitated by its causes. Meaning, yes, it's true, the world could have had a different history, but given that the world is as it is, this was what had to happen, right? So from the moment, you know, the moment that the first choice was made, let us say, yeah, if a different choice had been made, then everything sliding doors, right? Which is a reference to an old movie where there's kind of two different stories that at one point sliding doors and they go in two different directions, right? That first moment, right, let's say determines everything else. And if it had determined a different path, then we wouldn't be here. But it didn't. It determined this path, which meant that there's a causal deterministic kind of story that gets us to here. Says Chasdai Kreskas, that is the nature of the possible. Meaning what? There is determinism. You didn't have a choice, right? You came in. Now, it's possible in itself, but it was necessitated by its causes, right? Which immediately makes us think, so hang on, am I free? If I was caused to do this, then is that free will? And on the one hand, Chasdai Kreskas is aware that people might think this isn't kind of free will, right? Which is why he goes on having said this, right? So the only kind of possibility in the universe is that abstractly speaking, if I think about being here today in the abstract, possible it could have been different, but in reality, it couldn't have been, right? Because it is, as he puts here, efshari, right? Bibchinat sibotam, right? These things are possible, but necessary through their causes, right? Ela shal pirsum hazeh mezik lahamon l'mashiach ayvehu hitnatzlut l'osei harav lo yagishu sha'onesh nimshach me'averot ki mashech ha'masavav min hasiba. Right? And he knows this is something we don't necessarily tell the public, right? The masses might get upset because they'll think then, well, hold on, you know, you can do bad and you can succeed. Everything's just determined, right? Then you'll do bad and that's okay. Right? Because you were determined to do it. So you're not going to get punished, right? God isn't going to punish somebody who, well, they had to do that, right? So he's going to say, oh, bad boy, you're going to, right? That's not fair, right? The masses are going to say this doesn't work, but that's only because they don't understand, says Chasdai Kreskas, that actually, onesh nimshach me'averot ki mashech ha'masavav min hasiba, that punishment actually causally simply follows as an effect, right? Whether you notice it immediately or not. Right, he thinks basically Schava Onish is built into the very fabric of the universe. Right. Well, as I am a chokma elit barach lesumam, right, Rotzilamala mitzvot lasharot, right. And that's why the great chokma of Hashem was to give us mitzvot nasharot, right, which are emsayim, maniim, the sibot, chazakot, laheshirei, Ha'adam, Ela Ha'atzlacha Ha'enoshit, which are basically the movers and shakers, right? The things that will cause human beings for the great success, right? If we do mitzvot, then we will succeed, right? It will be good for us, right? This comes from God's goodness, that he's built a world in which there are, from the outset, mitzvot that can lead us, right, as long as we do them, to the good. And, if we don't do them, lead us to the bad. At which point you're all saying, yeah, but if we're determined to do them or not to do them, then, still, is that fair? But the point being that he is giving us a completely different view of free will. Free will is not alternate possibilities, because for him, there aren't alternate possibilities. Free will for him is doing what you chose. What you chose might be determined. I chose to come here today because, again, I'm psychologically determined to do so, maybe physically determined, maybe whatever it might be, I was determined to do so, right? But nobody put a gun to my head and said, you can't. I wasn't constrained. The external compulsion piece matters, because then it's compulsion. But if I do what I want to do, I'm free, so he says. And again, that troubles us in a way, because how can I really be free if I couldn't do anything else? But again, if you think about it, isn't that in some way, what we want? I want to be the following kind of person. The kind of person who walks into a store and I buys a bar of chocolate. I'm not sure I want to be that person, but what can I do? I'm that person. I walk in, so I want to buy a bar of chocolate. Put my hand in my pocket. I don't have enough to pay for the bar of chocolate. Do I want at that point to have alternate possibilities? Well, I could steal it, or I could, right? And it's 50-50. I don't want to be that person. I want to be the person who says, I haven't got enough, and walks out the store. I want to determine my actions, so to speak. I want them to be determined, or to determine them, right? Is that being determined? Is that me determining them? But I don't want alternate possibilities at that point. I really don't. I don't want to be that kind of person. I want to be the person who has formed himself such that, or been formed, and obviously lots of things go into that, such that I'm not going to do that. We're still troubled, but hopefully what you begin to see is free will is actually really strange. It's a mystery. We all want to think we have choices. We don't want to be random, right? I don't want to be, I could steal the chocolate. I want to know that I'm not going to steal the chocolate. Right? I want to be able to trust my character such that it is determined that way. But at the same time, don't be completely determined, because then they have a choice. And the truth is, some of the greatest philosophers end up saying, yeah, it's a mystery. Free will is genuinely a mystery. We think we've got it, right? Oh, alternate possibilities. And then you start to think about it, and it's not clear that works. So you start thinking about chaste kreskens, right? More determined. Think, yeah, but then, so what is it? I don't know, right? It's a mystery. If I had more time, I would give you a possible solution, but we don't. And it's still mysterious, and I'm not sure the solution works. But anyway, just some food for thought. Right? Is there a big difference? Right? Well, yes, but defining the difference might not be very easy. And with that, it's 10:15, and I have to pass over to my wonderful and learned colleague, Professor Fraim Karnefogel. Thank you all for coming, and have a, it's a bit early, but Pesach shopping started, so Chag Sameach. This was a pleasure. Thank you very much for listening.